You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
That's the choir of Truro Cathedral with the hymn Jesus Shall Reign Where'er the Sun, playing right now on our 24/7 sacred music station, Lutheran Public Radio. It's sacred music for the world. It follows the course of the church year, and it's absolutely free. You can listen anytime, any place at lutheranpublicradio.org or on the LPR mobile app. You've noticed people doing this, maybe you've done it yourself, where a political view that you hold that has no, say you're a Christian, has no thus saith the Lord whatsoever, becomes as near and dear to you, as precious to you as any religious dogma, and you'll fight for it sometimes with more fervor than for your theology. I've noticed a lot of times over the last 25 years as a Christian pastor that people hold their politics more dearly and more carefully than sometimes their theology. But what's happening in the American landscape now that politics has become like a religion for so many on the left and the right? Joining us to talk about treating politics like religion, Gracie Olmsted, Associate Managing Editor at The Federalist, editor of a weekly newsletter for women called Bright, and author of a recent column titled, We Need to Stop Treating Our Politics Like Religious Dogma. Gracie, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you for having me on the show, Todd.
What makes the political divisions in America today different than the political divisions that Americans have experienced in the past?
I think there are several factors involved. I think that the American church in past decades have encouraged people to associate specific partisan issues with their religious faith, and those different issues will differ depending on the church you go to, whether it's in the Bible Belt or in New York City. But we've kind of learned to associate our spiritual lives with our political beliefs, and I believe that even as we've seen religion decline amongst the average American in their day-to-day life and participation, that sort of religious fervor and its association with politics still exists. And then, you know, of course, the other part of this that I think we need to talk about more is how the media today oftentimes encourages this sort of us versus them, extremely just divisive and schismatic approach to politics. And I think that's really been a detriment to a lot of Americans and our ability to have thoughtful conversations with each other.
Let's stick with that second point that you made for just a second. Why is it that the media has a vested interest in keeping things so acrimonious and keeping things so amped up and, as you said, to the level of religious fervor as they do?
Right. I think we need to remember that a lot of us, for better or worse, make money off of people following our websites or our newspapers or our magazines with a lot of enthusiasm. And sometimes you generate that enthusiasm by coming up with clickbaity headlines, by making the other side look especially evil. There's many tactics that I think the media uses in order to help draw us in and keep us captive listeners, to get more subscriptions, to get more viewers, you know, on cable news at night. It's something that is sad, but also part of doing business. I think what we need to see is more Americans being wary of where they're getting information and double-checking their facts.
Can you give us some examples of how it's become, how politics have become religious dogma? Some examples that would bring familiar to the average consumer of political news today.
You know, one example I put in my column was that after Donald Trump was elected, you saw a lot of people on the left talking about 1984 and Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, both of them very dystopian, very doomsday sort of books, and saying that, you know, with the ushering in of Trump, this is pretty much what we're going to have. And, you know, all the women out there were going to lose their rights to do anything and everything. And that was really sad to me, just because I don't think that's an accurate picture of our political situation. It's a bit hysterical. But after President Obama was elected, I remember similar rhetoric coming from the right and a lot of people saying that religious liberties and Second Amendment rights would cease to exist. Now, you know, without doubt, some of these politicians do attack these things, but thankfully we have a system in place with balance of powers that are supposed to help prevent any sort of executive leader from becoming an antichrist figure. Unfortunately, the media still will paint them as someone with unbridled power to hurt our way of living, and they do it, I think, at least in part, to kind of help make us a captive audience. We're much more likely to listen to doomsday broadcasts than we are to more reasoned takes on things. And that's kind of a sad thing, but it's something that we can only change, I think, by being more aware of that rhetoric and the tactics behind it.
Now, this is kind of a touchy subject with many, but at least around the office here, we have often observed, and I think the observation has some merit to it, that with the advent and the success of conservative talk radio, something changed in the way that the, at least on the conservative side, people were doing their political thinking, or, sad to say, it stopped doing their political thinking. What are your thoughts in that venue?
I would definitely agree with that. And I say that with a lot of hesitancy, just because I know so many people. I grew up in, you know, rural Idaho, and I remember listening to conservative talk radio on my way to, you know, volleyball practice or orchestral practices and concerts and things, and it was kind of a part of that fabric growing up. And as I got older, I felt that the fear-mongering got stronger and stronger, and it was less about reasoned and thoughtful arguments about politics and more about, you know, this is what the left is trying to do to you. This is how they're trying to tear away your freedoms, tear away your rights, and we all have to be on the defense. And there wasn't so much an attitude of encouraging people to think through positions as it was, in my opinion, fear-mongering. And I find that to be really sad. I think there are exceptions, of course, and I point out Hugh Hewitt as one who I think takes a much more thoughtful tone on political debate and has guests on his show that come from a variety of different positions. And so I think that we also need to talk about the people who are exceptions to this sort of a rule.
Gracie Olmsted is our guest. We're talking about treating politics like religion. She's associate managing editor at The Federalist and author of a recent column there. We need to stop treating our politics like religious dogma. Well, that's the exception on the right. Is there an exception on the left in its fear-mongering? Stay tuned.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about treating politics like religion. Gracie Olmsted of The Federalist is our guest. After a conversation with her concludes, we talk with Mark Hemingway of The Weekly Standard about those two special congressional elections that, didn't turn out the way at least the media seemed to predict that they would come out. And we'll also talk about the compatibility of Islam and democracy with Dr. Adam Francisco of Concordia University, Irvine, California. Before the break, Gracie, you were talking about, or we were talking about, a right-wing conservative talk radio and its kind of ability to take over the political mind of its listeners. To be fair, and it came a little bit later, there is also its corollary on the left, and that is late-night comedy talk shows where the left sometimes lets the host do their thinking for them. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. I think you see people like Stephen Colbert taking an attack in his late night show that is decidedly more political and probably, although I don't watch it as often as I used to, I have a toddler who makes me wake up early. But, you know, the tack that he often takes is one that looks at a politician like Trump and doesn't just make fun, but attempts, I think, at times to encourage a sort of fear or vitriol amongst his audience. And I think that would be a true across the board. I think a more vitriolic example actually would be someone like Seth Meyers. But all of the late night hosts right now have really taken the opportunity of our schismatic political moment to use their shows to, I think, make specific political points. And I think humor is oftentimes much more effective when it's less partisan, but that's just kind of the situation we have right now, unfortunately.
You mentioned Hugh Hewitt as an exception in conservative talk radio to much of the fear-mongering that tends to prevail in that particular wing of the media. Is there an exception to the fear-mongering on the left in kind of a left-leaning media?
That's a good question. I follow a lot of progressive writers who I find to be very thoughtful and interesting, some of them at The Week, some of them at The Atlantic. I found that, you know, The Morning Joe on MSNBC is oftentimes a really interesting one. Although they dislike Trump, I think that depending on the issue, there's often a lot of sympathy shown for various conservative people that they have on their show. And so that's one I've continued to watch to some degree. It really seems to be difficult to find thoughtful discourse at times on cable news. And so that's just something that I've run up against. But I have really enjoyed NPR and their podcasts as kind of, I think, a really good attempt to bridge over maybe some of the more fierce rhetorics that we see from maybe cable news shows. I think that their radio shows are still really making an effort to bridge divides and draw together interesting audiences. So I don't know if that's a very helpful answer. It's hard to find people on both left and right who are really trying to bridge those divides and present media that's just thoughtful more than it is partisan. But I think that following Trump's election, there is an impulse toward that and a desire perhaps to encourage that. And hopefully following last week's shooting in Alexandria, we will see even more of that.
I've come to the conclusion, Grace, that we can't blame the media for that phenomenon we now commonly refer to as the echo chamber. That's a function of how we consume media rather than what media is offered to us. So how would you advise us to get out of our own personal or ideological echo chambers when it comes to how we consume political media?
I think it really needs to involve a physical act, because the nature of social media, for instance, Facebook and Twitter, is that we're most often going to be hanging out with and talking with people who come from similar backgrounds, who we know through school, through church, through, you know, the neighborhood we grew up in, say, the college that we went to. And that's going to inevitably sort of result in an echo chamber. But when you get out your front door and you walk down the street, the town hall meetings that might be in your neighborhood, you get the opportunity to meet people who are outside of that bubble and outside of that echo chamber. And so I really do think that it's important for us to bridge perhaps the physical gaps that might otherwise help encourage our echo chambers. Also, I would just encourage people out there, before you click on a clickbaity headline, consider what message you're sending to the people who wrote it. I know it's a tactic that all of us use, and I understand why media do it, but they really create these stories because they know it will get them traffic hits, not because they think it's the most thoughtful or interesting or powerful way even to present a story. So I just really think that the more of us consumers demand something different from news media, the more opportunity we provide for a different type of news.
I'm wondering about whether or not it would be a good idea to purposefully not just seek out that real face-to-face association politically, rather than the one that is created by both our preferences and the logarithms of social media designed to funnel stuff to us that we already think and believe. But I'm wondering whether or not it would be helpful to just, pardon my poor phraseology, to scout the enemy a little bit, to listen to the other side, even if we find it personally uncomfortable to listen to the other side.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I still follow Salon and the New Republic and a lot of media sites that are definitely more progressive than me, Slate, others, because I want to understand as much as possible where they're coming from on issues related to Trump, healthcare, other things. I think it makes me a better persuader and a better writer, and hopefully also even a better human being, someone who to reach out to people instead of just shutting them down. And honestly, it's not always easy to disagree with, but I think it's important to be a well-rounded reader so that we understand where people are coming from and can have better conversations with them, whether it's in our personal or professional lives.
You say this, and I want you to explain it by way of kind of summarizing everything you've said and written here. You say we all want and need community. If our politics makes community impossible, then perhaps we've gotten things a bit messed up. What do you mean by that?
Well, Aristotle said back in the day, a long time ago, that man is a social animal. You know, we were not created to live as polarized individuals. We are not happiest when we are alone. We are happiest when we are in community. And according to Aristotle, that starts with the household, with family, and then it expands beyond that into towns, city states, just various forms of gathering. And this is the idea that America hit on when you think about the writings of Alexis de Tocqueville in Democracy in America back in the 19th century. He saw America as being a place full of associations, private associations of people who loved to spend time together and who were very active politically, but more importantly, acted as private citizens to help encourage community. And I think that that's something we're at danger of losing, you know, for various reasons, whether it's that we spend more time in front of our TV than we do on our front porches, or whether, you know, we're not going to church or to town hall meetings anymore, whatever the reasons are, we are losing that community fabric, and it results in people who are less happy. And so I really think we need to fight to bring back that sort of community connectedness, and that having a more civil discourse is just a piece of that puzzle that helps bring us, hopefully, together again.
Finally then, Gracie, here's what concerns me, and I want your thoughts on it. What concerns me is that this kind of divisiveness, as you say, bordering on religious dogma in terms of our politics, has worked. It wins elections. Or it does at least provide a lot of momentum for candidates who want to win elections. And I'm wondering whether or not it is, at least for the time being, a permanent part of our political fabric, because it pragmatically, it gives a guy or a woman a chance to hold office. What are your thoughts on that?
That does make sense to me, especially on the national level. It works best when you're campaigning for a large office, I think. When you can paint things in very strong us versus them terms, fear-mongering works. You know, when people think that someone's trying to take something from them, they're liable to hold on to that tightly and to vote for the person who says that they can preserve those freedoms for you. And so it is a tactic that oftentimes works. I think and hope it's something we could fight on the local, on more of a grassroots level, start to build up that fabric of community that then helps people not to be as reactionary as they are thoughtful, and to be less offensive than they are proactive. I really do think that things have to start small. You know, all change starts small, but that hopefully by kind of achieving these things on a more local sphere, they could eventually build into a movement that isn't so much reactionary and isn't so driven, hopefully, by fear and division. But, you know, that is, once again, a movement that is very hard to stem and to stop. So it'll just take time to see how we can achieve more connection and less division.
Gracie Olmsted is Associate Managing Editor at The Federalist, editor at a weekly newsletter for women called Bright, and author of a recent column titled, We Need to Stop Treating Our Politics Like Religious Dogma. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Gracie, thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
In just a few minutes, Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard joins us. We're going to be talking about two special elections, one in South Dakota, the other in Georgia. Stay tuned.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
I've got some friends down in Houston.
Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Smartest listeners in radio.
You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.